The Complete Adventures of Sammy the Seal, a New Zealand story written by Michael Perrier, read by Pinky Agnew. Chapter 1. Sammy the Seal at the Waikanae River. Hello, my name is Sammy the Seal. I am a fur seal and I live with my family around Kapiti Island, off the west coast of New Zealand. One day, when I was growing up, I decided that it was time to go exploring. I left my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters and off to the sea I went. I swam past the little blue penguins, stingrays, orca whales and sharks that all live around Kapiti Island. Ahead of me, I could see the beach where the emperor penguin, known to locals as Happy Feet, had visited. He had travelled all the way from the Southern Ocean without any of his family and got lost. Happily, some people had saved him and taken him in a big boat back to his home in Antarctica. I looked back towards my own home, Kapiti Island, and saw what looked like a small boat in trouble. It had a smoking engine and it looked like it was sinking. But it wasn't smoke that I saw. It was an orca spouting water. If I wasn't careful, I was going to get eaten by one of those terrible black and white whales. So I swam faster and faster towards the shore. As I neared the Waikanae River, there were people kite surfing. They nearly ran me down as they scooted back and forth along the waves. Into the river mouth I went, right past the people fishing for whitebait with their nets in the water. They told me to go away and leave the whitebait for them, chasing me away from their nets. Luckily, there were plenty of fish in the river for me to eat. A large black oyster catcher was watching me, along with four banded dotterels and two pied stilts. There were also lots of white-fronted terns looking at me as I swam past. Everyone was very curious. I was feeling quite tired after my long swim, so I climbed onto a large rock to rest. Along the riverbank came a big black dog. I had never seen a dog before and it frightened me so much that I dived back into the river and swam right out into the middle before stopping to see what the dog would do. The dog jumped into the water and swam after me. I had stopped in the water. When the dog reached me, he also stopped to check me out, maybe looking to see if I would make a tasty meal. But when the dog stopped swimming, he began to sink. He had to paddle flat out to stay afloat, and he splashed water everywhere. The big black splashing dog scared me so much that I dived underwater and took off up the river. I swam under the swing bridge and kept going upstream. I spied a large flounder and caught it for dinner. Turning onto my back, I held the flounder with my flippers and had a lovely meal. As I floated on my back, I looked up and saw birds I had never seen before when I lived out at sea. There were tui, kereru, wax eyes, blackbirds and thrushes. Flying up high were large black swans, and honking Canada geese were making a terrific noise. That night, I hid under a large flax bush and went to sleep. But it wasn't long before a little moorpork woke me with its loud moorporking. Then the possums in the trees started grunting and screeching, and they came down to see who was hiding under the flax bush. There were also water rats, stoats and hedgehogs scurrying by. Finally, I slept again. At daybreak, the rabbits came out to feed and a large hare splashed across the river from one side to the other. I continued to swim upstream and found lots of children swimming in the river. They were swinging on a rope tied to a tree and dropping into the water with a huge splash. I swam quickly past the children and then hid under an overhanging willow tree until it became nighttime. After dark is when the large slippery eels in the river come out to feed. So I helped myself to a couple of tasty eels for supper. What a great adventure I'd had. I was ready to tell my brothers and sisters all about the fun I'd had exploring the Waikanae River, and I couldn't wait to tell them about my lucky escape from the big black dog. So I set off again and swam as fast as I could all the way downstream. I swam past the tyre swing, past the flax bush I had slept under, and back under the swing bridge, all the way back out to sea. When I finally reached Kapiti Island, my family were really pleased to see me arrive home safe and sound. It was time to tell them all about my adventure. Chapter 2, Sammy the Seal at Waimanu Lagoons. I'd had a great adventure exploring the Waikanae River, and I wanted to explore more. So I went to see what I could find in the Waimanu Lagoons. I crossed from the river into the lagoons, and the first thing I saw was a large black swan. "Hello," I said to the swan. "You look like you're having some trouble." "Trouble, you say?" said the swan. "Let me tell you about trouble. Did you see all those cygnets in the lagoon? I'm ready to make a nest and start a new family, but I can't get rid of all those young ones. I fluff up my feathers and paddle flat out across the lagoon, chasing them right up onto the bank. But they keep coming back, and I'm wearing myself out," the swan grumbled. "Never mind, I'm sure you will chase them off for good soon," I said. I swam on, passing Mr. and Mrs. Dabchick, the smallest birds in the lagoon. "Hello, Mrs. Dabchick," I said. "Is that your baby on your back? It looks like a little bumblebee." "Yes, it is," said Mrs. Dabchick. "We always carry our babies on our backs when they are small. Sometimes they snuggle under our feathers and hide, and you wouldn't even know they were there." "That must be tricky when you dive underwater. You are diving birds, aren't you?" I asked. "Yes, that's right," Mr. Dabchick told me. "When Mrs. Dabchick has the babies on her back, she can't dive under, so I have to feed her." "We live on the water because we can't walk on land like ducks do," Mrs. Dabchick explained. "Our feet are right at the rear of our bodies, and we haven't got webbed feet like other water birds, only loose webs on our feet. When we make a nest, we make a little floating one against the bank." "Good on you," I encouraged them with a flick of my flippers. I continued up the lagoon, where there were three shoveler ducks, also known as spoonbills. "Hi, spoonies," I said, admiring the large beaks that gave them their name. "You are looking very smart. Are you wearing your breeding plumage?" "Yes, Sammy," said one of the spoonbills. "We are going to build a nest under those flax bushes." "What's that coloured band through your beak?" I asked. "When I was little, some humans caught me and put a bright coloured plastic band through my beak," explained the spoonbill. "Don't worry, it didn't hurt, just tickled a bit. Now people all round New Zealand can recognise me. Someone recently spotted me down in Southland." "What were you doing in Southland?" I asked. "Sometimes we like to fly the length of the South Island to see what's going on down there," said the spoonbill. "But we always come back here to breed." "Wow, good luck with your nest," I told him, then swam off to see what the scalp were doing. Scalp are small diving birds that some people also call black ducks. Good day, little Scalp, I greeted them. How are you today? Not too good, they told me. That dreaded harrier hawk has been flying over the lagoon and we've had to bunch up to protect our babies. We even had to dive underwater when it swooped down on us. I looked up and saw the harrier hawk swooping down again, aiming its sharp talons at the Scalp. Look out, I cried. Here it comes again, looking to take one of you for its dinner. Just as well I'm here and can scare it away. I flipped onto my back and flapped my flippers at the harrier hawk, feeling cross. The hawk flew away, looking for other prey to eat and feed to its own chicks. Life on the lagoon isn't always fun and games. There were around 20 mallard ducks nearby, and I swam over to say hello, but I soon realized that some of the ducks weren't mallards at all. Hello, I said, feeling puzzled. How come you ducks are all mixed up? Some of you look like mallards and some of you look very different. Hi, Sammy, said Melly, a mallard drake. Good spotting. We have a couple of white pekin ducks here with us. We liked them so much that some of us ended up making a family with them. When the ducklings came out of their eggs, they had a few white feathers too. I think I like the blue-green feathers on your head best of all, I said. Thanks, Sammy, but look, see how those feathers change colour when I turn my head? He asked. It's the sun shining through the feathers on my neck that makes my head look green. Only us drakes have blue-green heads and curly tail feathers, you know. I never noticed that before, I admitted. Hey, what is that white-faced heron doing on the pipe that lets the water flow under the road from the northern lagoon? Just a spot of fishing, said Mally. I watched the heron closely. He was standing on the pipe and waiting for his food to flow through it. As soon as he spotted a fish, wham! He reached down and speared his dinner. Look, now he's got his dinner and is flying up into that tree to rest, I exclaimed. Here comes another one, said the mallard duck. She's flying down the middle of the lagoon and is going to land on the pipe to do some fishing of her own. The first heron isn't very happy about that, I noticed. He's diving down from the tree, protecting the fishing spot and chasing off the interloper. As the heron flew away, I said goodbye to Mally and swam on towards the other lagoon. The only way into the lagoon was through a big concrete pipe, but I was a bit worried because I couldn't see through it. And I didn't know what lived on the other side. I decided to ask one of the large white geese on the bank for advice. Hi, Goosey. Have you ever swum through the pipe?
No, Sammy, he replied. We are too big and the pipe is too small.
What's on the other side? I asked.
Well, I do know that Missy, the large guard dog, lives over there somewhere. She is very fierce, and we are all scared of her, warned the goose.
I had caught a mullet for breakfast, and now I was starting to feel quite brave. I might just swim through the pipe, I thought to myself. I can come back quickly if I have to. And I won't get out of the water. Maybe the guard dog just doesn't like geese. Suddenly some humans arrived and launched a large rubber dinghy. They whizzed around the lagoon, dropping boys all over the place. Then lots of kids came along with little sailing boats and started to sail them from one end of the lagoon to the other. This was too much for all the birds. They were so scared that they took off for the safety of the river.
The boats scared me as well, and I dived under a flax bush to hide. I don't think I will go through the pipe after all, I decided. There might be humans on the other lagoon as well. Oh, we'll come back another day. Chapter 3. Sammy the Seal at the Waimea Lagoon. After my adventures at the Waimanu Lagoon, I was very curious to see what lay through the large pipe under the roadway. A white goose had warned me about Missy, the fierce guard dog who lived there, so I was a little nervous about exploring it. But one day, after I'd caught one of the many mullet that live in the lagoon for breakfast, I started feeling brave. I thought I might just swim through the pipe. After all, I could come back quickly if I had to. Maybe the dog was only guarding against geese and wouldn't notice me. So I slowly swam through the pipe. It was very dark and a bit scary. When I came out the other side, I found myself in a beautiful new lagoon. There was a little steel footbridge across the narrow part, and even better, no sign of a fierce guard dog. I was very pleased that I had been brave enough to take a look for myself. To one side was a tree full of nesting pied shags, and they smelled terrible. "By golly, you lot, Pong," I said. "No, we don't," said a pied shag. "We think we smell lovely." I realized that I had been a bit rude, so I tried to think of something nice to say. "I like your tree," I told the pied shag. "Thank you, Sammy. We found it 6 years ago, and now look how many birds use it," the pied shag replied. "Way up the top are 4 large royal spoonbills, and further down are 6 little black shags and a little shag." "Golly, I didn't realize there were so many different shags in the lagoon," I said. It was very interesting to see, but I was feeling a little dizzy from the horrible smell, so I decided to keep exploring upstream. I swam slowly under the little footbridge and up the middle of the lagoon, where I came across Thomas, the white goose. "Hello, Thomas, how are you?" I asked.
"Not bad, Sammy, but I'm getting too old to be looking after baby swans. I'm thinking about retiring," said Thomas.
"But Thomas, you're world famous," I reminded him. "You have been living on the lagoons for over 30 years and have helped raise over 73 baby cygnets into grown swans."
"I know. I'm just getting a bit too old and cranky for babysitting these days," Thomas replied.
He did look a bit tired. "Well, good luck, Thomas. I'll continue exploring," I told him. There was a little creek leading off the lagoon, so I decided to swim up it and see where it went. If I went quietly, I hoped that Missy, the fearsome guard dog, might not notice me. Suddenly the creek was teeming with lovely, sleek eels. I had never seen so many in one place before. "This must be where Trish, the eel lady, lives," I thought. I had better not eat any for lunch in case Missy the guard dog lives here too and gets angry at me. Then I saw Missy, and she was not a big guard dog at all. She was a tiny little Sydney Silkie dog with a pink ribbon tied in her hair, and she was fast asleep. But perhaps she was more dangerous than she looked. I decided to tiptoe past, just in case I woke her up.
I swam on up the creek, leaving all of those delicious eels behind. Luckily for me, Missy, the fierce guard dog, stayed fast asleep. I slipped quietly through the water, past a park that was full of kids. They were playing on swings and slides, yelling and making a lot of noise. I kept swimming until I reached the Waimeha Lagoon. What a lovely lagoon this is, I thought. It was very shallow with lots of bushes and trees all around the edges and no houses close by. Waimeha is a great breeding lagoon because it is so quiet and the kids and dogs can't even get into the water, so it's nice and safe for birds to lay eggs and raise their young. I spotted a little viewing hide where people could sit and watch the birds and animals on the lagoon without them even knowing they were there. I saw some pūkeko prancing around while two paradise ducks were swimming around the lagoon. I swam over to the nearest duck, who had a bright white head and colourful wing feathers. "Hello, Mr. Paradise Duck," I said. "I'm Mrs. Paradise Duck," she corrected me. "We are not like most other ducks, you know. Usually it's the drakes who get to wear the bright colours, but my male partner is the drab one, with his plain black head and dark feathers." "You do look lovely," I said. "Yes, but it does make it very hard to hide with my nest in the scrub, because my white head and coloured feathers make me easy to spot," she complained. "Never mind," I said. "I've heard your alarm call and it's very loud." "Oh, yes, that's true," she agreed. "I am also a wonderful actress. You should see me pretending that my wing is broken when any danger threatens my babies. They are very clever and will swim out to the middle of the lagoon to escape. They will even dive down into the water to hide. That's how intelligent they are." As she swam away, I saw six royal spoonbills standing in the shallow water. Some were standing on just one leg, and I wondered how they didn't topple right over. "Hi, spoonbills," I said. "What beautiful birds you are." "We are not called royal for nothing," one of the spoonbills replied. "Our long black legs, large black spoon-shaped bills, white feathers and yellow eyebrows do make us rather special, and we know it. There are none quite like us anywhere on the Carpety Coast."
"Didn't I see you at the top of the shag tree earlier?" I asked.
"Yes, that's right. We like to roost on the top of large trees at times because we feel safe up so high," the spoonbill replied.
I was trying to listen to him, but I kept being distracted by the little swallows ducking and diving all over the place. There must have been a lot of insects hatching on the lagoon for them to catch and eat. They flew swiftly and turned very quickly in the air, helped by their forked tails. One little swallow came to rest on a nearby flax bush, so I swam over to say hello.
"Thanks for stopping, little swallow," I said.
"That's all right, Sammy. I've eaten my fill of insects and need to rest," replied the swallow.
"Do you nest here?" I asked. "We used to hang our nests from the ceiling beams in the little hide," said the swallow.
"You won't believe the time it takes to build a nest. We make ours with little mud bricks which we bring up in our beaks. It takes ages, and then we line the inside with feathers to make it cozy and warm. But every time we built a nest there, before we could lay our eggs in it, some naughty kids would arrive and destroy it. It was very sad to see, after all the work we did bringing the mud up from the lagoon. So we don't nest in this lovely spot anymore."
"What a shame," I said sadly as the swallow flitted away. As it turned out,
swimming through the pipe to the Waimeha Lagoon wasn't so scary after all. Chapter 4. Sammy the Seal at the Waikanae Estuary. After my visit to the Waimeha Lagoons, I decided to head back downstream for my next adventure. I snuck past Missy the guard dog, under the little bridge, and past the shag's tree, past the scalps, ducks and geese, and into the Waikanae River. I was quietly minding my own business when around 50 little black shags landed in the water next to me. "What are you all doing? You really frightened me," I said. "Sorry about that, Sammy," said one little black shag, "but there is a large school of little fish in the river at the moment, and we are all feeling very hungry. We have not had any fish since yesterday." "Just you watch us. We'll show you how to catch fish," cried another shag. With that, all the shags dove under the water together. They started to herd the little fish upstream towards a large shingle bank. When the shags at the front were overtaken by the ones at the back, they flew out of the water to the front again, dived back down, and continued to chase the fish onto the shingle bank, where there was a frenzy of feeding. I was amazed to watch the terrified little fish throwing themselves out of the water onto the shingle to get away from the shags. Just then, two white-faced herons flew over and rushed along the shingle bank, gobbling up the little fish that the shags had chased up there. Behind the herons, four royal spoonbills flew in and followed the herons on their feeding run. I had never seen anything like it. There were three different bird species working together, although the shags were doing all the work and the other birds were reaping the rewards. After everyone had eaten, all the shags flew off together and landed on one side of the river where they sat with their wings spread out. "Why are you all holding your wings out like that?" I asked. "We spend a lot of time under the water fishing, so we didn't have the oil on our body that most birds have. Otherwise, we would float," explained one of the shags. "That helps us to catch fish, but sometimes we get waterlogged, so we have to hang our wings out to dry." It was wonderful to see. I love visiting the Waikanae Estuary because there are more seabirds and water birds there than anywhere else in the Wellington area, not to mention seals like me that come to visit too. Soon the sky began to glow pink and gold, and the birds began their goodnight calls. The sun was setting behind Kapiti Island as the last rays of the sun streamed into the heavens. As the sun disappeared, I snuck under a flax bush and curled up. I knew there wouldn't be any possums or moorpawks this close to the ocean to come and wake me up, so I would get a good night's sleep. In the morning, I decided to explore the sand spit. As I got closer, I came across Bluey, the little blue penguin. "Hi, Bluey," I said. "I didn't know you visited the beach." "Oh, yes, I come here quite often," Bluey said. "It's such a lovely spot with plenty of fish to eat." "Just make sure you watch out for orcas," I warned him as we surfed the breakers onto the beach. On the beach, there was a large group of white-fronted terns. "Hi," I said to no one in particular. "How are the terns today?" "Very good," one replied. "There are lots of little herrings just past the breakers, and we've had a good morning feast." "You are all looking very smart," I said, admiring their forked tails that help them fly so swiftly. "I can see why you are called the swallows of the sea." Next to the terns was a group of red-billed gulls. "Why are you facing into the wind?" I asked one of the gulls.
If we don't do that, all our feathers would get ruffled, explained the red-billed gull. So you can always tell which way the wind is blowing by looking at which way we are facing, and we always take off into the wind. The black-backed gulls were off to one side. Hi, gulls, I said. The last time I saw you lot was on the boulder bank on Carpety Island when you were nesting. G'day, Sammy, said a large bird. We have finished nesting now. If you look amongst us, those large brown birds are our babies. Further up the beach were two Caspian terns. Hi, Mr. Caspian, I said. My, you are large, handsome birds. Thanks, Sammy. We are the largest terns on the Sandspit. We like to fly across the oceans, said the Caspian tern. Sometimes we go across the Pacific Ocean all the way to South America. We are now having a rest. We really like it here, but we wish those dogs were on a lead. Are there lots of dogs running loose on Waikanae Beach? I said. That's a worry. Ask Ollie, the oyster catcher, said Mr. Caspian. She knows all about the dogs. I found Ollie further along the beach, quite upset. It's really hard being an oyster catcher, said Ollie, walking across the sand towards me on her long orange legs. She was a large bird with glossy black feathers and a bright orange beak. I don't have webbed feet like most seabirds. I have feet like a chicken, she explained, and I can't hide very well because my black feathers stand out against the light-coloured sand. I like living here on the Sandspit because I have a lovely nesting place and plenty of food with lots of logs to hide behind. I don't build a nest, though. If I did that on the beach, people and dogs would notice it. So I just lay my eggs on the sand. My spotted eggs are the same colour as the sand, so they're very hard to see. When I sit on the eggs, it looks like I'm just sitting on the sand, she explained. But the dogs are a real problem. There are two kinds of dogs on the beach. The first is the little pet dogs. They use their sight and love to chase us birds, but it's quite easy for us to get off our eggs, run very fast on our long legs, and lead them away. The second kind is the hunting dogs, spaniels and labradors, which are more trouble. They use their noses to sniff out where I have been nesting, and when my babies are first hatched, they can't fly away. They are camouflage, the same colour as the eggs, so they blend in with the sand. I teach them to freeze, crouch down, and not move. But these hunting dogs can track them down. So I lose quite a few of my babies and have to start all over again with another nest, said Ollie sadly. I didn't realise the problems you have, Ollie, I said. Oh, look, she cried. Here come two large hunting dogs off the leash. I can help. Let them chase me and keep them away from your babies, I said quickly. I jumped up and down and waved my flippers at the dogs so they would chase me instead. It worked. They chased me all the way into the water, but they left the oyster catcher alone. Bye-bye, Ollie, I called as I dived into the surf, waving my flippers in farewell before I returned home to Carpety Island.